You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290 in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Buffalo News, Mike Harrington. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us. Mike, are you there?
I can hear you now.
Excellent. Now we can hear you, too. How are you this morning, Mike?
Good morning. Always nice to join you in the off-season when things are quiet, right? Up there is no off-season in Buffalo lately.
Yeah, nice and quiet. The nice sleepy off-season both in Buffalo and Toronto and everywhere else. The Buffalo-Toronto games are usually a pretty decent rivalry game. How much more heated are they going to be after, well, first of all, it's sort of a two-part question. One, did the Leafs steal Mike Babcock right from under the Buffalo Sabres, as a lot of people had heard or supposed about? And two, I mean, is this rivalry really heating up now between these two franchises?
Well, it'll certainly heat up now anyway, because I assume both teams eventually get better. The Sabres are certainly going to get better once they draft Jack Eichel, and the Leafs maybe get Dylan Strome, and like Babcock is going to be an upgrade from the coaching standpoint. They have to figure out their direction still, and it's a hot rivalry in the stands, and certainly Babcock will get some taunting here in Buffalo. Did the Leafs steal him away? It depends who you talk to. I mean, there was no contract signed, but the Sabres certainly felt there was an agreement in principle there. And ultimately, Babcock used the Sabres a little, sure, but I think his family, specifically his wife, did not want to come to Buffalo. And the lure of an original six team was very strong with Mike Babcock. I do believe that point, that it was a tipping point of the scales kind of factor, that the Leafs are an original six team like Detroit.
Mike, what were some of the other reasons that Mike Babcock would have chosen Toronto over Buffalo?
I do think there was a good relationship with Tim Murray from their days in Anaheim if he had come to Buffalo, but I think the Brendan Shanahan relationship was very key. There was a lot of trust there. I do think there was, you know, we've heard there were a lot of questions in Mike Babcock's mind about the delineation of power within the Buffalo organization. In Toronto, you're going to have Brendan Shanahan and Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas, and that's pretty well established. In Buffalo, yeah, there's Ted Black's the team president, but he's not involved with hockey. And they're starting to become these layers of people around Terry Pegula, the owner, some of whom aren't really hockey people, some of whom are, a lot of whom we don't know what they do. And I think Mike Babcock had the same questions a lot of us who follow the Sabres do. What's the line of power here? I think there was a lot more of a sharper focus of whose duties were whose in Toronto. And I think that was a factor in Babcock's, you know, examination of both franchises.
Do you have an idea, Mike, what the total, like, do you know if Buffalo did offer 10 years to Babcock?
We've heard conflicting reports about that. The 10-year thing was confusing. Babcock made a reference to it in a media scrum after. A lot of people think he was referring to the Leafs. A lot of people think he's referring to Buffalo. It's been continued to report that it's an 8-year deal. The Sabres, $50 million is the reported package. We heard the same thing. I think the financials were zero factor. He knew he was getting paid no matter where he went. It was simply a hockey and family decision.
And then you asked a good question, I think a fair question, Mike, at the press conference, I believe right after Darren Dreger let it off. And you asked him, but I mean, in my opinion, Mike Babcock didn't really answer the question directly. Did you share that opinion?
Yeah, he did not answer it. So then a Buffalo television reporter kind of came back to the question a few minutes later, and he dodged and parried again. And that's when I broke the quorum. Too bad. I yelled out without the microphone. So all you heard on TV was the voice, kind of like Charlie Brown's teacher. You know, but I yelled out, quite frankly, did you have a deal with them or not? And his answer then was very succinct: no. But did we talk about financial in term? Absolutely. So in his mind, he didn't have a deal with them. In the Sabres' mind, I think they had an agreement in principle. But if you ask any lawyer, he didn't have a deal. Nothing was signed.
Well, and Mike Ritchie's a lawyer. So.
Oh, yeah. But Mike, you know, it's interesting because Tim Murray, of course, especially after the kind of the backfire that he had to deal with after the losing out on the Connor McDavid sweepstakes and kind of the emotion that he had in his comments right after, the next day Tim Murray came out, I'm not sure if it was your article, Mike, or somebody in the Buffalo News, he came out and basically said, you know, Mike made a decision, and he was politically correct far more than he had been in the past. Do you think he was biting his tongue a bit and not really saying what he thought just because of what had happened before with the media?
No, I think he understood that there were certain things he couldn't deal with. He couldn't deal with the Toronto factor. And you know what, guys? Yes, they wanted Mike Babcock to be their coach. And I think the fan base is reacting the same way. The fan base actually is probably less upset about this than the team is, because this is a good rebuilding job available with a lot of young talent. They're going to get a fine coach. They're going to have no shortage of people interested in this job if they go to Danny Bylsma, for instance. They don't get Babcock. You know, I think that was Murray's and Terry Pegula's grand vision. This was Terry Pegula's vision to pair up Rex Ryan with Mike Babcock and kind of show his two teams have these great free agent coaches. It didn't come down that way. It didn't work out. The fans are fine with it. They're like, okay, we'll just move on to the next coach here.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, discussing the Sabres coaching, connection to Mike Babcock and where they go from here. And that leads me to my next question, Mike. Where do the Sabres? You mentioned Dan Bylsma as a candidate. Do you think there's a sort of somebody who's sort of a head in the clubhouse to be the next head coach? Or do you think that Tim Murray is now going to take his time and maybe interview a number of different candidates to find the right person?
I think they are going to interview a bunch of candidates. I also think Bylsma right now is their lead guy. I think Tim Murray back in February, January, was already eyeing Luke Richardson out of Binghamton, who worked with him in the Ottawa organization, as his guy. But then Pegula, they got Rex Ryan. I think they said, you know what, we need to go for a bigger name than Luke Richardson when we get rid of Ted Nolan. And when Babcock became available and was interested, I think that really got them going, thinking this could happen. Now, you've come that close to dallying with Mike Babcock. I'm not sure you can go to an AHL guy who's never been in the NHL before. I think they're thinking we might need NHL pedigree, whether it's Bylsma, if they talk to Peter DeBoer, Guy Boucher. And the other one I think of is if the Bruins end up getting rid of Claude Julien, that might be another guy. But in my mind, the Team USA connection they're building in Buffalo here, Bylsma worked TV at the NHL Network during the World Juniors. He was an assistant coach of the Worlds. He's had up-close views of Jack Eichel. Bylsma, to me, should be their guy.
Yeah, you know, Mike, we were talking about this last hour on the show. You know, Mike Babcock, everyone really thought he was either going to stay in Detroit or maybe go to Buffalo, and before that, maybe Edmonton. But I guess, you know, you mentioned some of the potential coaches in Buffalo, and Dan Bylsma could be the front runner. But to me, Buffalo is extremely appealing. Not only do you have, you know, the potential of Jack Eichel going there, but you have the draft coming up in 2016. You've got the new Harbor Center there. You've got a really good young team, Evander Kane. Just kidding. So all those other reasons, you know, Buffalo, is it not a very appealing place to be right now?
It's a very appealing place to be facility-wise, team-wise. There's young, coming up-and-coming players. There's guys like Evander Kane who have a lot to prove. When you think about how good the Sabres could be soon if Evander Kane comes, plays with Eichel, and turns into a 35-goal guy and not the 19-goal guy you guys have seen. He's a real X-factor guy here going forward. You can mold a team, a lot of young players. The lure of Jack Eichel, you know, that's your top number one center. You have Sam Reinhart. You have Žemgis Girgensons. They're going to be strong down the middle. Rasmus Ristolainen in defense. They need to find a goaltender. But, yeah, this is a team that had 54 points this year. They were artificially deflated. They were tanking. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
They could easily be in that 80-point range next season.
They could be, the way the NHL teams move up and down. So, you know, year to year, Mike. I want to get back to a little bit about what you were talking about with Terry Pegula and wanting the big splash, because to me that kind of speaks directly to the maybe conflict or the question as to who has power. Because if Tim Murray has a plan, do you think, and this applies to the roster as well, do you think he's going to be able to implement it without Pegula interjecting when he feels that it's necessary?
Yeah, pretty much I think so. I think Pegula learned a lesson when he came in and, you know, directed Darcy Regier to go out and get Christian Ehrhoff and Billy Leno, and they realized, you know, too late that that wasn't the way to build a team, and you've got to do it the right way. Pegula doesn't interfere, my observation, with hockey matters. He wants to be kept in the loop, but they pretty much let Darcy Regier and the scouting staff go. They pretty much let Murray go. I think Murray will be able to build it to his vision. I think Pegula loved the splash he made by getting Rex Ryan in here, I think he thought Babcock would have the same impact. It probably would have. It certainly shook up the league that Babcock was that close to coming to Buffalo, and they'll be all right. Even if they end up hiring Luke Richardson, that wouldn't be a bad thing. I just think that right now they're trying to accelerate their whole program here, not be on a five-year rebuild.
And what do you think, you know, to that point, Mike, what do you think is that we know we can assume they're going to draft Eichel with the second overall pick, and Tim Murray noted, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that that other first-round pick, they would be willing to make a trade on that, and obviously they traded the other first-round pick they had to the Jets in the Kane Bogosian deal. What do you see as kind of the priorities number one, two, and three for the offseason?
They need to find a goalie. I mean, if they're serious about trying to win now and trying to win next year and potentially be in the playoffs in 16-17, they only have prospect goalies. They're going to have to go out and trade for an NHL-level goalie here. Maybe a guy like Craig Anderson in Ottawa now that they re-signed the Hamburglar. Maybe they go for a younger guy like a John Gibson or Martin Jones who hasn't gotten the time. But, you know, people say you can throw anybody you want in goal. We saw how that doesn't necessarily hold when you look at the Minnesota Wild this year. What were they before January 15th, before they got Devan Dubnyk? You can go through whole seasons in places like Edmonton and, you know, Phoenix, and if you don't have a good goaltender, your whole team comes down. So they can really set this thing back if they don't get somebody in net. They have to take care of that in the offseason.
Mike, we've got one last question for you here, and we appreciate you coming on because I saw you, I follow you on Twitter, and I know you did 25 interviews probably.
Popular guy.
Over the last couple of days, you were on the station here, was it a couple days ago? But Buffalo Sabres have two first-rounders, and of course they gave one to Winnipeg in the Evander Kane trade. Do you see them possibly moving one of those, or is there any doubt in your mind that they're using those two first-round picks?
No, they're taking Eichel at number two, but that second number one pick is 21, and Murray has talked about potentially trying to move up with it, or I think that could easily be dealt. That could easily be something to get another top winger, or maybe even move in and try to get somebody's goaltender. I don't think it's any lock. It's probably no more than 50-50 they use that second number one pick. They're ready to go here. They're ready to push this forward. You would never have traded a number one pick from this franchise the last 3 years. This time they're ready to make try to get an NHL player in here. I think it's only 50-50 they make that other pick.
Interesting times still to come this offseason in Buffalo. Mike Harrington covers the Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, appreciate your time this morning.
All right, gentlemen. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks again, Mike. We'll talk again soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
He's a loser, Marge. Dump him. I traveled the world in the seven seas. I am watching you through a camera.
The voice of Artie Ziff on The Simpsons, played by John Lovitz. John Lovitz coming to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club July 23rd through 26th. Tickets just went on sale earlier this week. They went on sale on Thursday. They've been going absolutely like fire. Thursday night show is already sold out. Friday's already sold out. And the Saturday early show is sold out. So if you want to see John Lovitz at Rumors, get on it really quick. Tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com.
He's coming for my birthday.
He is going to be here for your birthday.
July 24th.
July 24th, the birth of Ezra Ginsberg. A great day celebrated throughout the world. And
something like that.
Well, throughout River Heights, maybe.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. I mean, you know, I was giving you a compliment. I was praising you to the high heavens, Ezzy. But yes, John Lovitz going to be at Rumors. Go celebrate Ezzy's birthday by seeing John Lovitz.
I don't know if you guys, when you were younger, watched The Critic. I think it was only on for 1 or 2 years.
Very funny.
Critic was great. I think it got overshadowed a little bit by a show called The Simpsons. Rightfully so. But John Lovitz, he's been in so many movies. He's been in a lot of Sandler movies.
He's
awesome.
Well, and the best part, the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary special that was on a couple months ago, it's actually sort of a running gig through the whole thing. They did sort of an in memoriam segment of all the different cast members who had passed away on Saturday Night Live, and then they had John Lovitz's picture up there as him having passed away, and then they cut to him in the audience saying, "What? I'm right here."
We'll be getting together later today to watch High School High.
Rich, I'm high on life.
You're high on something already. Anyways, let's talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. They're high on their new head coach, Dave Hakstol, former head coach from the University of North Dakota, program we're obviously very familiar with here in Winnipeg. You know, this is a hire that sort of came out of left field a little bit, but, you know, we talked about it earlier, how the Bruins are sort of becoming more insular and the Flyers finally are sort of shedding that label, looking outside the box, I like this hire. I know it's a step going from, you know, college hockey to the pros, but Dave Haxtell has really proven all he can prove in the college hockey ranks.
I want to say a few things about Dave Haxtell. First of all, yes, Philadelphia, you know, we heard it might be Mike Babcock and all that, but and we just had Brad Berry on a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Who has now been named the head coach. He was the assistant coach, but UND was in the Frozen Four. So we had Brad Berry on, former Winnipeg Jet, former Moose assistant coach. We've met Dave Haxtell a couple times at the MTS Center. He was watching the Jets play. And I've talked to him briefly, and I don't know if I've ever met a nicer guy in my life. He was really nice. You know, we introduced ourselves, said we had a radio show, and he said, anytime you want to come on. Richie went to UND. We mentioned that. And, you know, Richie and I have gone down to UND a bunch of times and, you know, watched games. But so that's my experience because, you know, I don't meet all these coaches on a personal basis. But my first impression of Dave Haxtell, because he's had a great history with the UND program, Rich, was I was almost overwhelmed by how nice he was. Just a genuinely nice person. That's first and foremost. As far as his hiring by the Philadelphia Flyers, it's rare, Rich, that you have a coach from NCAA go to the NHL. I can't really think of one off the top of my head recently.
Herb Brooks?
Yeah, Badger Bob Johnson did it too, didn't he?
It hasn't happened in a long time, and I'm not saying that that can't work, but you look at the Philadelphia Flyers team right now, and we've talked about this before on the show. This is a team that isn't far away from not only going back to the playoffs, Rich, but possibly, you know, even winning a round or two. I don't know if they'd go to the Stanley Cup Finals, but they need to bring in some defensemen there for sure because they traded away Kimmo Timonen and Braden Coburn. And I realize they signed, I forget his name, a guy from the KHL, and they've signed a Czech defenseman.
I don't know his name either, but they just signed him to a two-year contract or something?
They signed him, and you know, I'm not sure what they're doing with Michael Delzato there, but Dave Haxtell, I think, is going in there, and you hear from whether it's Zach Parise or Jonathan Toews or TJ Oshie,
All these guys went to UND,
yeah. And you know, he did a pretty good job this year. They didn't win it, unfortunately, but they went to the Frozen Four year after year. You know, you hear Richie, Brock Nelson, and all these guys. I mean, the UND program, the hockey program, is really highly respected. It might be the most highly respected college program. It's right up there. I mean, Michigan, for sure. Boston College and Boston University, Rich. But, you know, I think the hiring is a good one, and it remains to be seen because we don't know what he's done as an NHL coach, obviously, but his track record working with players. And what you hear a lot, Richie, about Dave Haxtell is that he prepares his players for the NHL well.
Bob Johnson went from the University of Wisconsin to the Calgary Flames in 1982, and Ned Harkness went from Cornell University to the Detroit Red Wings in 1970. Those are the only two other coaches to have gone straight from U.S. college to the NHL with no prior experience.
Cornell, that's where Joey Nuendike went, right?
That's true. Joey Nuendike did go there. You know, I think it's an interesting hire. I hold Dave Haxtell in high regard. I think that similar to how it is in the National and in the NBA, so much of what the coaches at NCAA level do is about recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting the best players. It's about, you know, building through that. So you lose that advantage in that, you know, I don't know enough about basketball to say John Calipari is a great X's and O's coach. I can tell you that he's able to recruit. You would be able to speak this better than I would, Drew. He can recruit the best players.
Yeah, he's a better coach than they give him credit for. But his number, the reason why the University of Kentucky pays him $8 million a year is because he is the best recruiter on the face of the earth.
Right. So if you have the 10 best players, then, you know, better than every other team, you have a pretty good chance of winning every year. Now, I'm not saying Dave Haxtell always has the best players. I mean, his teams in the mid-2000s were certainly more talented than some of the teams he has now, especially offensively. You watch the teams in the late 2000s, a little bit more defensively oriented, and guys at the top, Danny Crisco, you know, they had guys like Brock Nelson go through, don't get me wrong, but they didn't have the Jonathan Toews, Zajac, Drew Staffords like they did in the, you know, 2004, 5, 6, Zach Parise, of course. So he was able to preach the defensive style of play, and, you know, a good sign always that his teams generally got better throughout the season, which means they were listening to him. To me, it means they're listening to him, and they were buying into what he had to sell. Having said all of that, coaching at a college level and coaching in the NHL is a whole different ballgame. He was Mr. Powerful at UND. He could do what he wanted. He had very good relationship with previous coaches at UND. He had whatever he wanted to do, he could do, basically. And, of course, he went to a bunch of Frozen Fours. Didn't win at all, and he said that was his regret, but did a great job. Can that translate to the National Hockey League? I don't know.
And no one knows.
Well, no one knows because it's hard to say. Like, it's been, what, 20 years or 30 years, really, since Badger Bob did that. Bob Johnson did that. And, you know, I think he's certainly a very capable guy, and I think that he'll earn the respect of the players, I think. But it's not – you don't have the same control as you did in college. So if Claude Giroux feels like not listening to you, how does he react to it? So I think it's a worthy gamble, but I think it's a gamble.
Oh, definitely a gamble. What I like from the Ron Hextall point of view, you know, this is his first big – you only get – as a GM, you only get to hire so many coaches.
And he coached his son. You have to point that out.
Right. That's exactly.
Well, if you're Edmonton, it's infinite.
That's right. If you're infinite, it's Edmonton if you're infinite. But Brett Hextall, Ron Hextall's son, of course, went to UND.
Yes, he did.
And was coached by Dave Hextall.
Yep.
And so there's
a huge factor.
Absolutely, it's a huge
Andy
factor.
Andy Murray's son went there too, to UND.
Right. But –
have to do that.
We had him on the show a couple weeks ago.
That's true, but
talking about anyways.
Mike Harrington had a bagel for lunch.
I hate you guys.
I had a bagel for breakfast.
Well, that's no surprise.
Yeah, that's no surprise at all. The point is, I mean, Ron Hextall obviously went out and he looked over the coaching market. I mean, Philly's got a pretty much unlimited budget too. I mean, they can play with the Torontos and the Buffaloes if they wanted to be in on the Babcock sweepstakes.
For sure.
And Ron Hextall went out and he clearly identified Dave Hextall as his guy. So I do appreciate a general manager sort of, you know, putting his job a little bit in the spotlight and taking a bit of a risk, but he seems clear and sure of what he believes, and I think that is a nice sign. This is my guy. This is the guy I'm going to go get. I went and got him. Now, hopefully, he does the job.
But again, this team is a team that I think – I picked them to make the playoffs this year. Obviously, that was the wrong pick. But I think, you know, if they – go out and make a couple of right moves. Mm-hmm. This team, they've got two of the best players in the league in Jakub Voracek and Claude Giroux, and
sure,
Sean Couturier, and you know Braden Schenn. I know has struggled a little bit. They've got the pieces there, mm-hmm. And you know you've got some young defensemen coming in, Sanheim from Manitoba, and you know you've got Sam Morin there.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
these guys are a couple years away from being, I think, everyday NHL defensemen, but you could see where they're going here.
Yeah.
And Dave Hextall, I think, steps into a situation. And again, Craig Berube, I mean, he had a tough year this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he mismanaged his defense a lot, Rich. And I think, you know, Dave Hextall is going to go into a situation where this team is a team that I think is still a playoff caliber team. And I think Steve Mason had an underrated season, quite frankly.
He said it last, and I'm probably be guilty of this, last couple of years that Steve Mason has had in Philadelphia have been underrated for how good they've been.
Yeah.
I mean, he's back to, I mean, is he as good as, you know, is he as good as his best was in Columbus? Probably not there, but he's certainly a middle of the pack goaltender.
I don't think he's that good.
I know you don't think he's that good, but his numbers bear out that he seems to be a middle-of-the-pack NHL goaltender.
Not just his numbers. I mean, the numbers do reflect what's going on the ice. But, I mean, he had a good year, Rich, and that defense in front of him wasn't the best defense in the NHL. So I'm not saying that Steve Mason is a top-10 goalie. I'm just saying, you know, he's
2.25 goals against the 928 save percentage.
He had a good year.
You're going to take that. The Jets would take that.
And that was a good numbers on a bad team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, I think Philadelphia is... they're not as bad as they were this past offseason.
I mean, their defense is terrible. That's the key. So how do they improve their defense? Their forwards are good enough, right? I mean, Simmons and you mentioned Giroux and Voracek and Shenezi and Couturier. I mean, you have pieces there for sure. It's how do you get the puck to those guys? And, I mean, their defense to me is a bigger issue than their goaltending. I'm not the biggest Steve Mason fan, but I do think their defense is a big issue, especially foot speed.
And that's the question. I mean,
their puck mover, like, sorry to interrupt you, their puck mover like Mark Streit is not a great skater. Like, you have to be able to move the puck, and you have to be able to skate in this game. Look at all the teams that are in there right now. Look at Chicago's mobile defense, right? I mean, everybody on that back end can skate. I know, you know, team names obviously lost a step. You look at the Ducks. Big guys like Fowler and Lindholm, and Fowler's a better skater than Lindholm, but they can both move, right? And aside from Stoner, really all those guys can move real well. Mm-hmm. You look at Tampa Bay and the Rangers, all of their guys can skate.
Another guy I forgot.
Maybe Klein's a little slower, but.
I just remembered someone you mentioned earlier went to Cornell, Ken Dryden.
That's true. He did go to Cornell as well. He's Red Aces? Is that what the Cornell team is? Or the Reds? I'd have to double check what
their jerseys are red.
Yeah, something red in their
red
in their nickname. No, I don't think so. That's St. John's, or that used to be St. John's, and then
the name's been changed.
Yeah, it's been changed.
Big Red.
I don't remember.
Is it Big Red?
Big Red isn't that a gum?
Do we not have Google here?
You are on the internet right now. You could just look it up. Why don't we go to break? We'll bring in Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News. Maybe he knows the name of Cornell. Talk more about the hiring of Dave Hextall. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. into the third and final hour on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Philadelphia Daily News, Frank Saravelli. Frank, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Glad to be back with you guys.
Yes, a pleasure always to have you on the air with us, Frank.
We missed you, Frank.
Obviously brought you on to talk about the Dave Hakstol hiring as the new head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, we had heard rumblings really maybe 30 minutes, an hour before it was officially announced that the Flyers were going to go a little bit off the board with their new head coach. How surprised were you when the announcement came down that Dave Hakstol from UND was going to be the new head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers?
I was definitely really surprised. I mean, he wasn't on my list of candidates, and perhaps shame on me for not looking a bit more into Ron Hextall's past. Of course, I knew that his son Brett played at UND, but it's just so rare to see a college coach make the jump that I just really never considered it a possibility. And clearly, he's a pretty good find. And you know, people talk a lot about inexperience at the NHL level, and I think in a lot of ways it's probably pretty overrated, especially in the case of a guy like Dave Hakstol, who went to 7 Frozen Fours in 11 seasons at UND.
Frank, was Ron Hextall close to hiring anyone else, or was Dave Hakstol his guy the whole time?
I'm not sure that he was the guy the entire time. That's, of course, what the Flyers said, but I don't think they were close to hiring anyone else. You know, it was really kind of a strange situation because, you know, a lot of people thought the Flyers were going all in on Babcock, and I think the Flyers were certainly interested in hiring Mike Babcock. I'm just not so sure, you know, what kind of chances they had to do so. And frankly, in a lot of ways, they hired a guy that, to me, as I wrote this week, seems like Mike Babcock light. They actually look similar, which is freaky in and of itself, but it seems like their personality traits and their demeanor are also pretty similar, and I think the Flyers are trying to get sort of the next Mike Babcock, if that makes any sense.
Frank, do you think that Ron Hextall would have been any, like, would have even considered Dave Hakstol if not for his son having played at UND?
It's hard to say. I mean, the good thing about, you know, having your son play at the University of North Dakota is that you got a chance to watch Dave Hakstol in action for a few years, so you have a really good sense of what you're getting, whereas if you hired a guy that, you know, has been recycled through the NHL ranks, you're kind of more going on what other people have seen. So I do like that in the sense that he's trusting his own gut here. Of course, you sort of worry at the same time that, you know, perhaps was he looking at the situation with blinders on because he is so familiar with Dave Hakstol? Did maybe he, you know, sort of go with his gut too much in that sense, if I make any sense there.
Our guest is Frank Saravelli of the Philadelphia Daily News talking about the Flyers and their hiring of Dave Hakstol as their new head coach. Frank, for the last number of years, it seems like the Flyers have always looked internally to people either with ties to the Flyers organization or former players of the Flyers to fill coaching vacancies, to fill general managers' vacancies. This is the first time in a while they've sort of gone outside the box and looked outside of the organization. You know, is that sort of a good, to your mind, is that a good decision by the Flyers to maybe bring in some fresh blood and some fresh ways of thinking into the organization?
I think that, to me, is the biggest bonus of hiring Dave Hakstol. It's the most important thing, because with this team, aside from Peter Laviolette in 2009, if you weren't friends with Paul Holmgren, Ron Hextall, or Bobby Clark before, there's a good chance that you wouldn't be hired by the Flyers. And I think all of that has changed now, and I think the Flyers wanted to get the best candidate possible. They said they wanted to get the best fit for the organization, and, you know, to me, that makes sense with Dave Hakstol, because he's a guy that has developed players at UND. He's used to dealing with younger players, and certainly he's a proven winner as well. So, to me, I'm really intrigued by his hiring, and I really think that he'll be a good fit here.
Frank, you had a good article, I think it was yesterday, if it wasn't yesterday, it was a couple days ago, about Sean Couturier, a guy who I really like, really good defensive forward, but he can score, and I thought you made some really good points in the article about how he played in the World Championships and how Dave Haxtell is probably going to end up using him more than Craig Berube ended up using him, didn't use him, as you pointed out, in offense situations. Is he a player that you think is going to be key for this team to take that next step and get back into the playoffs?
That is the absolute key for the Flyers, is getting their depth scoring. That's what was really missing for this team. You look at the way the Flyers finished last year. They had two players in the top 10 in league scoring. They had a defenseman who was in the top 10 in scoring among defensemen. And they had a goalie who had a .950 even strength save percentage after November 1st and didn't finish within 14 points of a playoff spot. To me, the downfall was not getting enough out of those players on the third, fourth line, and Couturier was a big part of that. And, you know, to hear Craig Berube continue to bark that he wasn't getting enough production out of Sean Couturier when he was starting him in the offensive zone just 26% of the time and playing him with R.J. Umberger, who had an awful season, and Matt Reed, who was hurt for most of it, it's kind of hard to expect more out of your player when you're putting him in that situation and asking him to play against top competition as well. So, you know, I think he's going to have a bounce back year. And if Dave Haxtell is smart, which I believe he is, he's going to try and utilize and get the most out of a guy like Sean Couturier, because he's, you know, one player that could help transform this team and get them back into the playoffs for next year.
Frank, do we know who's going to be coaching alongside Dave Haxtell?
We do not know that yet. And that is one of the intriguing factors with this team. You know, you would think that the Flyers and Haxtell would be wise to bring in an assistant coach, perhaps that has NHL head coaching experience, to sort of give him that boost on the bench. But, you know, I'm curious to see whether he's going to bring anyone from UND with him. Dane Jackson is one of the guys that was his assistant for 9 years and, you know, seems to me like a possibility to be on the Flyers bench. But they still have their other assistant coaches that they need to make a decision on sooner rather than later, probably, to give them the best chance to find another job if they're not going to be back with the Flyers.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Frank Saravelli. Frank works for the Philadelphia Daily News, covering the Philadelphia Flyers.
Frank, earlier this week, the Flyers signed Yevgeny Medvedev, a defenseman from the KHL. What do you know about him, and does that mean that Michael Delzotto's not coming back?
Well, it certainly doesn't mean that Delzotto isn't coming back. I think Ron Hextall said immediately that he would like to re-sign Delzotto, who presents his own interesting case. But with Medvedev, really kind of another off-the-radar move. He's a guy that apparently had offers from five NHL teams and chose the Flyers. They gave him a pretty large amount of money, in my opinion, $3 million on a one-year, one-way contract for next season. So they clearly believe in him. He's 32 years old, though, has no NHL experience, hasn't played on small ice in quite a long time, if ever. But he was obviously good enough to represent Russia at the Sochi Olympics. And he's, you know, played on their world stage for quite a while. So a guy that's pretty well respected over there, but suddenly make that jump at the age of 32 and give him a lot of money in the process when you have a logjam of defensemen already. He's their eighth defenseman signed. Delzotto would make it nine. That really makes kind of a hairy situation for the guys that you have, and kind of backs the GM into a corner, at least in terms of trying to unload a few of those players around the draft.
And it seems to cause problems, Frank, at least in my opinion, that the 8-9 guys you have on there, they're not particularly really good defensemen.
Well, no. I mean, that's kind of the complaint about the Flyers is, you look at the salary cap, and there's only three teams in the East, I think, that'll spend more on defense than the Flyers next year. I believe they're Montreal, Tampa, and the Rangers. And all those teams are pretty well positioned in the playoffs, and the Flyers aren't.
Mm-hmm.
You would seem to think that looking at this roster, they have a bunch of second and third pairing players, and you know there's no one that really separates themselves as the number one player, or a true number one in this league, and that probably is the Flyers' downfall. So rather than continue to add spare parts, so to speak, the Flyers really aren't addressing that problem, and I guess the rebuttal from Ron Hextall in that case would be, number one defensemen certainly don't grow on trees.
They certainly don't grow on trees. It's too bad a guy named Chris Pronger is still going to be there as their number one defenseman, of course. Frank, we'll let you go on last question. Ray Emery, he's a UFA. I presume that he's not coming back. And how are the Flyers going to fill that backup goaltender position behind Steve Mason?
That also remains to be seen. I really don't get a sense that Ray Emery will be back. He really didn't play too well the entire season. I think he finished certainly a sub-900 save percentage. So tough to bring a guy like him back. He likes it here, though. I'm not sure what they'll do. I'm really not even sure what the goaltending market looks like. Not sure if it's as strong as it was last season. Certainly rooting at that point for the Flyers to sign a guy like Devin Dubnyk, who ended up in Phoenix and then, of course, in Minnesota. So a ton of options last year, and really interested to see what the Flyers do, because the way Steve Mason played last year, he was excellent, but he was injured for quite a bit of the season.
Frank Zaravelli covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Philadelphia Daily News. Frank, we appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot for having me.
All right, Frank, take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Frank Zaravelli of the Philadelphia Daily News. Before him, big thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News and Michael Trakos of the National Post. Those three fine gentlemen were our guests on the program earlier today. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show itself, it'll be available for download on iTunes and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Probably coming up not too long after the show, Dave Manouk of illegalcurve.com, I know, is standing by ready to get the show up and online like the good, fine gentleman that he is. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports since 1974. Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
I got to head on over to Royal because it's nice weather out, and we're transitioning to short season, and got to get some shirt. I got to get my shirt game going. Got to get a new pair of shorts, new shoes. Game. I mean, you got to have the fresh gear, Drew.
What's the goal for the shirt game this summer, Ezzy?
Wearing one, I would hope, would be at the top of the list.
I'm gonna go with, try to have some diversified colors and different styles. And, I know Richie likes to rock the V-neck. I have too much chest hair for that, so I can't really go deep V-neck. Not that Richie goes too deep. He doesn't go, fully deep, past the, But,
past his belly button? He doesn't go all the way down there?
It was a great skit with Andy Samberg on SNL with the V-neck sweaters. That was a good one. Look that up. But, I'm going to go head over to Royal right after the show and, pick up some flip-flops and, baseball bat maybe and some maybe surf. They've got everything there.
Weren't you banned by Richard's uncle from playing baseball on the team?
I wasn't banned. As Richie knows, I was a bit of a pull hitter.
Not a bit of a pull. Every single time he hit, it would just be the third baseline, directly down.
So
I would
always foul out. But I was good in the field. I was a good team player.
I just want to talk more about, you talked about buying shirts and getting some shorts, and then you said you're going to go ahead down after the show and pick up some flip flops and a baseball bat.
Well, because, it's nice that we can go have a game of baseball.
That's never happened before. Yeah.
We've played baseball. We have a baseball game.
I'd just be worried that Ezzy would only show up to the game with flip-flops and a baseball bat.
No shirt. Because he didn't buy a shirt. No shirt, no shorts, but a baseball bat and flip-flops.
We've got everything there. Basketballs, skates, hockey equipment.
Yeah, they do have everything there. We agree. You seem to be buying up the store today, which I'm sure is a good thing. So, check it out. RoyalSports.me online for hours, locations, and more. UFA of the week time as we head closer to July 1st. When the unrestricted free agents that are those who are set to be unrestricted free agents, of course, they can still re-sign, set to get their freedom about 6 weeks from now, we head to Boston where we're going to discuss Carl Soderberg. And he's sort of an interesting guy. 29 years old. He'll be 30 at the start of next season. He's an October birthday. So once the 2015-16 season kicks off, he'll be 30 years old at that point in time.
He's a Scorpio, Drew.
Really? You knew that?
Well, late of October would be a Scorpio, but anyhow.
I guess, are you a Scorpio?
I'm a Scorpio, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense why you know that then. He's an interesting guy in that he's played the majority of his career.
Is that just real right there?
Well, Drew said he's an October birthday and he's 30. How does that matter?
I'm a Leo. I'm a king of the jungle.
I'm a Leo too there. Anyways, interesting guy in that he's played the bulk of his career overseas in Sweden, playing in the Swedish Elite League, since being drafted in the second round by St. Louis in the 2004 draft. He's only been in Boston, really, for the last two seasons. He played six games in 2012-13, but excluding
those. He came in right before the playoffs.
Yeah, right before the playoffs there. Excluding those, he's been a 44-point guy this year. He was a 48-point guy the year before. His salary cap hit this year is nothing. It's just over $1 million. So the Bruins are getting a lot of value out of him. You know, Carl Soderberg, you know, is this a guy who's, you know, set to, you know, cash in pretty decently in a pretty depressed free agent market come July 1st?
Yeah, Rich, I think there, all the indications are that he's going to re-sign in Boston. To me, though, it's a pretty interesting UFA because how many years are they going to offer Carl Soderberg? Based on, he kind of slots in Richie as your third line center, right? Because it's Bergeron and Krejci up the middle.
But does he want to play that role?
Well, on this team, I think, and last year, he was a third line center and did a good job. You know, Drew mentions, you know, he's kind of a 20, 25 goal guy, 50 point guy, right? You know, at this point in his career, he's probably not going to surprise you with.
If he can get 20, 25, he'll get a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
You know?
But that's kind of what you're looking at, right? And he's not going to be the first line center because Patrice Bergeron's firmly planted in there as the number one center there. And he plays a lot with Brad Marchand there. And then you've got Krejci who plays a lot. And they had Pasternak up there. With David Krejci, he obviously had some injury problems there. But to me, Soderberg, I really like his game. And you mentioned that, you know, he's only played a couple years in the NHL here. But I think they know what they have in him. He's a veteran guy, 29 years old. And I think he creates offense and he's responsible defensively. I really like his game, Rich. Carl Soderberg, kind of an underrated player. But if you ask the Boston Bruins, I think they'll tell you that, you know, he's a very valuable member of their team. Sure, this team needs to improve, Rich. They need to score more. They had trouble scoring goals this year, so I don't see them letting him go.
I think in a really depressed market, I mean, he probably is going to get himself a 3-year, $15 million deal. Like, it's probably an overpay. He's got talent, guys. He's a big guy. I don't know a ton about his game, so I don't want to speak out of turn. But I just think based on the points that he's able to get, the age, Drew, as you mentioned, and the fact he can play center for you. And he can play your second line center role if you need him to. I think he's going to get a 3-year, 4-year deal at 15 to 20 or 16, 18 kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's just what the market's going to bear.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, 30 years old, but he doesn't have a lot of miles on him. I mean, he's played overseas.
NHL miles, so less physical.
Yeah, less. I mean, he's played overseas in Europe. And then, I mean, when you're playing overseas in Sweden, you're playing 50 games a year. You're not playing 85 games a year.
Not as physical either.
So, you know, this year, he's, you know, really played two playoff seasons. The one in 2012-13, he joined the Bruins just at the end of the year there and played some of the playoff games there. Last year, obviously, played in the playoffs. This year, no playoffs there. So, a guy who's a veteran, but doesn't have a lot of miles on him.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who plays center when centermen are not readily available.
That's right.
A guy who, you know, he's going to get you 50 points, so he's more of a player, or not 50 points, but he could get you between.
Well, no, if he plays, if he gets big time minutes and opportunities, he should be able to get you 50.
Right. So, you know, and a guy who's going to get you, you know, maybe 15, 20 goals at the top end, probably.
Drew, Richie makes a good. Sorry, Rich. Yeah. I mean, you make a good point when you say. I mean, Bergeron and Krejci, very strong. The Bruins have always been strong up the middle for the last five years.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying a guy $5 million to be your third line center. I would say that's actually a good investment. I think you want to have depth at that third line center role.
Can they afford
look at the Anaheim Ducks with Ricard Raquel? He's done a really good job.
He's cheap though.
He is, but I'm just saying it's important to have that depth.
If I look around the league, this is what I see. I see too many teams who would want him as their second line center to be able to, for Boston to afford him at the 71.5 cap that Gary Bettman projects it will be.
Yeah.
Especially because they can need some help on the back end, right?
You think he'll get five? That's.
And he might in this market.
I don't think he gets anything less than four.
Yeah, I think he doesn't get anything less than four. So you're looking at 4 years, 16? That's what I'm saying.
But even that is. I mean, as you mentioned, Drew, when we were talking about Don Sweeney being named the GM, Boston Bruins, they have a lot of money tied up in long-term contracts.
Look at Jim Benning right now. Jim Benning's in Vancouver. He's got a second-line center hole. Let's be honest. Why would he fit perfectly there?
Soderberg, Swedish. Sedin's.
Yeah. Not that young, but
Eddie Lack is Swedish. Edler's Swedish.
But
I mean, there is
Benning knows him better than anybody. He's been the Boston organization. Needs a second line center. Bonino's not fit for that role. Whoever they're going to play there.
Well, he might be in a couple more years, but sure. Right now he's not fit in
Bonino
that role.
Bonino won't be ever fit for that role.
And they haven't
maybe
signed
Bo Horvat will be fit for that role eventually.
The segment is called UFA of the Week. They obviously haven't signed him, but you got to think that
I'm saying like this. These are the teams that are going to be competing for him. Yeah. If the money is there. I mean, look at a lot of teams, even Chicago, not that they have money there, especially with Kane and Taves' contracts going to be increasing in pay next year. But Brad Richards on a one-year deal. Wouldn't he fit nice in the second-line role there?
Sure.
I mean, you look through the league, there's a lot of teams that
These sound like good spots for him.
Montreal needs size up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can they afford him? So I just don't think Boston's going to be able to slide him into the role that they want. They're paying Krejci and Bergeron too much to pay him that much in the third line.
Yep.
So what happens with Stahl and Sutter, all that, that's what happens with these teams, right? So you look at the other squads. I can name you another 10 squads that could use this guy.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, a centerman who's going to hit the, you know, who can put up points and he's got good physicality and he can play up and down your lineup. Like you said, he can play top six. You know, if you're on a very good team and you have, you know, he could be your third line center. He's going to get paid. I mean, this is the big contract
of
his career.
Second line center.
I know they're going to pay him.
Well, and we talked about this last week with Jeff Petrie, who's a UFA. I mean, aside from Mike Green, I think Matt Bolesky is going to re-sign in Anaheim. I don't see him not re-signing Richie the way he's played
to.
In the playoffs.
He said he wants.
He wants to, and I think they can afford to sign him. But Mike Green, I mean, Carl Soderberg is probably one of the top five free agents of the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, Marty St. Louis is a UFA, but he'll probably stay in New York, right? But, I mean, a guy who's 29, skilled guy. I like his game. I think Richie's right. I think a lot of teams are going to want him.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, and I think that's a problem for the Boston Bruins in that, you know, they might want to re-sign him, and I understand why they would. They just don't have the salary flexibility unless they can. I mean, maybe if you dump off Milan Lucic, but then again, are you paying? Are you too weak on the wings, which has been a problem in Boston for a number of years now, and too strong up the middle?
Antoine Vermette's another UFA, but you look at Soderberg. I think a lot of teams would rather have Soderberg than Vermette.
Agree, and also in terms of too strong up the middle, Drew, you can always move your centers to wing. You can't really move your wings to center.
Right. Okay, that's a fair point too. But I mean, I'm going to take a guy. Oh, you mentioned Antoine Vermette there in Chicago, Ezzy. And, you know, not a guy who's old necessarily, but, you know, Soderberg, I believe a little younger, right?
So I don't know Vermette's age off the top of my head, but the thing about Vermette is that he's a little bit more of your, Swiss Army knife kind of guy. You can play offensively if you need him to, but you can't always rely on him in that role. Mm-hmm. You can play defensively. You can play your second line center role. You can play on the wing if you need him to. You can play your third line center role. I mean, again, he hasn't had much success in Chicago. That doesn't mean he's not a good player.
No, Vermette closer to 33. I mean, if I'm going to pay, who's got a lot of miles on him.
Absolutely, Drew. I agree with
you. Yeah, I'm paying. I mean, you're right, Ezzy, when you said that Soderberg is going to be, I mean, he's quite possibly the best centerman available.
That says more about the market than it does about him.
Right. But he's still going to cash in because these, you know,
I think
the guy
who's going to cash in the most, maybe Bolesky, but it's the guy that's going to cash in the most is Mike Green, I think.
Really? You think Mike Green?
Yeah, the way he played in
Washington.
But
he's so one-dimensional.
He's improved defensively, sure. His defensive side, he's not a prototypical shutdown defenseman, but I think with the lack of solid veteran offensive defenseman, I mean, we saw it at the trade deadline. You know, the Rangers went out and got Keith Yandle. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to think he's going to get north of $5 million a year. So
he might in this market, but not for long term.
Yeah, he's not going to get 6 years or 3 years.
Two years max. Yeah. Maybe a 2 year deal at five. But like
the thing that the players have going for them is that you, we're using logic. The general managers, when it comes to July 1st, it seems like logic flies out the window for them.
Well, you know what though, this year, the big splash was probably Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen. Those are great signings.
For the season. I mean, long term, the Orpik contract is going to be a nightmare, right?
Yeah, he was signed long term. You're right.
The players know it. So you know, when free agency hits, it's always it's not a buyer's market. I mean, the players hold the cards. Yeah, I'll come to your team, but it's going to cost you another year.
And that's a cap too. Is a certain team's going to be maxed out, and you have a certain amount of money you have to spend as well.
Yeah, and so few players that are really of any excellent quality ever make it to free agency nowadays. So, I mean, you know, guy like Carl Soderberg
last year might have been Matthew Perreault in Winnipeg.
One of the best ones,
certainly. Certainly. No argument there whatsoever. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Carl Soderberg when July 1st hits, and he's a guy who I think is going to cash in pretty well. Head to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the coaching vacancies that still exist around the NHL. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Knott Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at knottautocorp.com. Talk about some of the other coaching vacancies that still exist in the NHL. As you know, a lot of them got filled this week. It was an incredibly busy week for an off-season weekend, or week, rather. Hopefully it continues for a little while longer. We can always use the content here on the program. But there's still three teams now that have coaching vacancies that need to be filled. Well, there's more than three, but we talked about Buffalo's already with Mike Harrington earlier in the program. Let's move to Detroit now. And obviously they have a vacancy now that Babcock has gone and left them for Toronto. Do you think this is Jeff Blashill's job if he wants it?
Yes, no question about it. And why wouldn't he want it?
Well, I'm sure he will.
Last year, Kenny Holland, I heard Kenny Holland this week say that last year he gave Jeff Blashill the option of interviewing for coaching candidacies, and if he didn't get it, coaching openings, if he didn't get it, then he'd be able to bring him back and be happy, or alternatively, he would pay him double and he wouldn't coach anywhere else. He wouldn't interview, and then they'd reevaluate, and that's precisely what's happened. They've they doubled the salary. He's right now in the AHL playoffs, I believe, still going on.
In the finals, if I'm not mistaken. Or they're certainly in the conference finals, at least.
And kind of like a little bit like John Cooper, and that he coached a bunch of the talented young players in Detroit right now in the AHL. I think that Ken Holland is a loyal guy. He's, you know, he has a plan in place, and I think that Jeff Blashill will be the next coach of the Red Wings. I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
Yeah, they're going to play against the Utica Comets. It starts tomorrow with the Western Conference Finals in the AHL playoffs. You know,
and they just found out that Mike Babcock isn't going to be their coach anymore, Rich, and he's in the playoffs. So you got to think, as soon as the AHL playoffs are over,
he just promotes him.
Yeah, Jeff Blashill is going to become the head coach, and he you know, you hear what he's done in the AHL with the Grand Rapids Griffins and all the players that have played in Grand Rapids. So we could go over all the players: Thomas Yurko, Thomas Tatar, mm-hmm. Riley Shane.
Basically,
everybody, right? Yeah. And you're right, Richie. You made a good point. It's exactly like the situation with John Cooper in Tampa Bay. He had a lot of success in the AHL with a lot of these players, and so it makes it's natural progression. And again, the Detroit Red Wings. I know, you know, Mike Babcock, some people were giving him a hard time when he left. He was kind of talking about how there weren't some of the younger players pushing the veterans like Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg, but they're a goal away from going to the second round. Mm-hmm. So this Detroit Red Wings team, I think, I wouldn't be surprised if they make the playoffs again next year.
It's, you know, it's interesting. I actually, quickly, as a bit of an aside, interesting to hear Ken Holland talk, but he seemed to look at the Mike Babcock tenure as a very successful tenure, don't get me wrong, but if you listen to them discuss it separately, Babcock and the successful 10 years, and Holland refers to the successful 10 years, but seems to have hesitation or some regret that, you know, they couldn't beat Chicago a couple of years ago with the 3-1 lead. They couldn't beat Tampa Bay this year with a 3-2 lead.
Oh, which they were very close to being in the driver's seat. 2-0 lead in game four. They could have taken a 3-1 lead.
That's also true. You know, obviously not beating Pittsburgh, in the finals the following year in 2009. So, I mean, Ken Holland has an interesting view of we would have liked a little bit more success. I love that perspective, really. I think Ken Holland's a brilliant guy. And if he thinks Jeff Blashill is the guy, then why would I doubt him? Aside from Dave Lewis, who was a short, just didn't work in the short term there in Detroit after moving over from assistant, and they let him go. He's made very many good decisions. And, of course, he makes some mistakes, like all do. You could say Dave Legwand trade was a mistake, all that, but over and Stephen Weiss. But at the end of the day, I mean, Ken Holland.
There was injuries there, though, Rich.
And also, you just trust that the guy knows what he's doing, so.
But I heard some. I don't know if this is true. I heard that the offer that they put in for Phaneuf at the trade deadline was Stephen Weiss, just to probably dump the salary. Yeah. Brendan Smith, who's an RFA defenseman, and Timu Polkanen, who's going to be their up-and-coming
guy. Timu Polkanen, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they went hard to get try and get Dion Phaneuf.
I'm surprised that deal was true.
You know, if that was actually what was offered, I'm surprised that didn't get done from Toronto's perspective.
And you have a lot of talented.
You got Zidlicky instead.
You have a lot of talent. We didn't give up much. We have a lot of talented young players there in Detroit, obviously, and it's a good job, and the structure is in place. You don't have any questions about the structure, right? Ken Holland, you obviously still have Jim Devolano around the organization, but Holland is your guy. They have the cap guys in place. Everything is very structured in Detroit. So I think that's a great job. It's probably the best job in the market this offseason, to be honest.
You know, we should probably hear from Ken Holland. We didn't get a chance to do that throughout the course of the show, but Ken Holland spoke, of course, about Babcock leaving. Let's hear Ken Holland, Detroit Red Wings general manager, on Mike Babcock leaving to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs.
First off, from my perspective, I'd like to thank Mike for 10 fabulous years. You know, hired Mike in 2005, and we made the playoffs for 10 consecutive years. I went to the Final Four three straight years in 07, 08, 09, and won a cup in 08. And at the same time, you know, the last few years, I thought he did a fabulous job in putting some younger players in our organization onto our team and developing them into players that we think are going to help us going forward. So I've got mixed emotions because he's one of the greatest coaches in the league, if not the greatest coach. But at the same time, you know, as we went through the process, I think Mike understood that when you'd coached in the same city for 10 years, you know, my offers last June were a 4-year term. Again, in January, was a 4-year term. We went to, when we started the process, he wanted to kind of go out and talk to teams that had interest. And then as we sat yesterday morning, I said, Mike, the best I can do is 5 years. When you've been in the same city as long as I have and as long as Mike has, you don't get much longer term than 4 and 5 years. So I think that certainly part of the decision-making process probably for Mike was the amount of term that he could get in Toronto versus what we were prepared to give.
Certainly, you know, Ken Holland is, you know, they had the best coach, Richie, in your estimation, and Mike Babcock. They still probably have, I think you can make the argument that Ken Holland's the best general manager in the league.
Pretty good one, I think.
Yeah, certainly up at the top of the list there. And, I mean, speaks eloquently. And I thought the way...
sorry to interrupt you. The thing about Holland that I appreciate is that he speaks honestly.
Yes, very much so.
I thought it was really nice that Mike Babcock took out a full-page ad in the... What was it, the Detroit Free Press?
Yeah, that was the Free Press or the News.
And thanking the city. Very classy. I mean, these are classy guys. Like, this organization... Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the model organization, right?
It is.
They make the playoffs every year. Mm-hmm. They've got all the Stanley Cups, all the history with Gordie Howe and everything.
And Jeff Blashill will probably, unless something shocking happens, be the head coach of the team. And you have to, I mean, Ken Holland has to look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, the team that beat them in the first round, and see, you know, this is the AHL head coach in Tampa Bay who came up with all the players that are now on the Lightning, and, you know, just follow that exact model. And Blashill's going to come in and with all the AHL players that they have in Grand Rapids, and he's coached them for all the years, and hopefully just emulate the same amount of success that he's had in the AHL with the same players.
It's a good team. And you look at Luke Glendening was shutting down Tyler Johnson in the first round there, Rich. And then when he left the game, Tyler Johnson scored. He was a guy that played for Grand Rapids under Jeff Blashill. I mean, this is a team this is a good team in Detroit. They're going to be a good team for quite a few years here.
Yeah. Sticking in the Eastern Conference, the New Jersey Devils, they sort of came out of nowhere to hire Ray Shiro. Nobody really expected it because Lou Lamoriello had been in charge there.
And nobody, exactly. Forever. That's why no one expected it because he's been the general manager forever.
Yeah.
You know what, Drew? You know, I'll just quickly get in here. I think a lot of people thought Dan Bylsma was going to follow Ray Shiro to New Jersey from Pittsburgh.
Are you a Devils fan?
I like the Devils. It was tough to watch them this year, though. I'll be honest with you. The Devils were there wasn't a lot to cheer for this year. But the Devils, I think, you know, Guy Boucher is an option there. Guy Boucher had a lot of success in Tampa, and it unfortunately didn't end very well there, Rich. And John Cooper has succeeded him pretty nicely. But I think, you know, the Devils... It's going to be they're going to have to nail their draft pick this year because they haven't been nailing their draft picks over the last years. You know, Adam Larson's taken a step forward, but I think he's a long way away from being a number one or number two defenseman in the NHL.
Especially for a guy who was drafted what, third overall?
I think he was fifth in 2011, okay. Maybe fourth. He was drafted the same year as Scheifele for sure. You know, Guy Boucher, I think, you know, with a young team, this is a rebuilding year. I mean, the Devils, I'm going to be shocked if they make the playoffs. I mean, the Devils are going to have to go out and get some players in free agency, but this isn't a team I think that's going to be in the playoffs next year. So I think Guy Boucher, a guy that's got some NHL head coaching experience. You hear a lot about Guy Boucher kind of was more of an innovative coach, Rich. And, you know, I think the fact that Toronto was close to hiring probably shows you that, you know, you've probably got a pretty good coach there if Toronto wanted him.
Yeah.
Are everything based on Toronto now?
Their history of making the right decision.
Well, the thing is, Rich, Toronto is the center of the universe, not just North America or Canada. It's the center of the universe.
What do you think about Babcock calling around Toronto? The Leafs Canada's team?
Well, they are Canada's team, unfortunately.
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think Canada has one team. Well, actually, if you want to talk about it, our team is Team Canada.
Well, yeah, but they don't play in the NHL on a regular basis.
I know, but I'm just saying, if you ask someone in Edmonton and who's Canada's team, they're going to say the Oilers. If you ask someone in Vancouver, they're going to say the Canucks. If you ask someone in Montreal, they're going to say the Canadiens. There isn't one team. If anything, the one last Canadian NHL team left in the playoffs is usually Canada's team, right? Like 2004 was Calgary.
That's fair. I mean,
2006 was Edmonton. You know, the Vancouver Canucks in 2000. I mean, there's not every year to year. It's like, does there have to be a Canada's team every year? Do we need to do that?
No, I'm not one who subscribes to the theory that you know you have to cheer for the team from Canada that's in the playoffs. I never quite understood that. 95% of the players on all these teams are Canadian.
Like,
so.
Do most Americans think the Cowboys are America's team? Well, or are they just called that?
Hated. Either they're loved or hated. So they have this grassroots. Like, if you go to a game in Toronto and Winnipeg, there's a lot of Leafs fans, but everybody hates the Leafs.
Yeah, I don't think that. I'm not sure that the Leafs are Canada's team by any stretch of the imagination. But I to your point, I also agree that there probably isn't one necessarily.
Canada has seven teams.
Yeah, I'm fine with that comment. Anyways, back to Dan Bylsma potentially as a candidate in New Jersey to take on that job. Are you surprised at the length of time Ray Shiro is taking to sort of hire that new head coach? I mean,
it wasn't hired that long ago.
Well, it's been
a week, two weeks.
Yeah, it's not that long.
Really? I thought it was closer to three or four, but you guys very well might be right.
I think you were gone when he was hired.
Yeah,
actually.
And I think it was the first Matt Lachlan show. I think it was the first show I missed.
It was two and a half weeks ago.
Okay.
It's funny because you were around New Jersey in the New York area. So
I was. They didn't consult with me about the Ray Shiro hiring, though.
But you ate a churro.
Not surprised at all because, you guys
I also ate that famous Ray's original pizza.
That sounds delicious. I could eat a whole pizza right now.
A couple of things, okay? So Bylsma and Shiro have the relationship, so clearly Bylsma would feel secure being with Shiro. He knows what he's getting into and Lamoriello, and you have new ownership and all that. So it's appealing in that sense. Team on the ice, well, you have Eric Jelinek, you have Severson, you have a couple guys in the back end, you don't mind. Oh, up front, you're about 100,000 years old. And in net, you have a good goalie. So there's the perks of the, some young guys in the back end, although still need to develop. And you have an Adam Larson as well, I should mention, although he really hasn't looked that good.
He was fourth overall, by the way, Adam Larson.
Yeah, so you look at the back end, you look at the goalie, you see Schneider. Up front, again, as I said, you don't have much there, really. Conversely, you look at Buffalo. Well, Buffalo, you have a lot to like about the talent level and the way they're going because they have young guys in the back end. They don't have the goalie in Schneider, but they have the young guys up front. So it's more appealing. Having said that, the familiarity with Shiro might win over if he has the option. The upside with Buffalo, and especially if, as Mike Harrington said, Terry Pegula is kind of involved in that. Maybe he wants Bylsma, but maybe Bylsma sees that as a red flag and saying, "Oh, he wants me, and he wants to get involved." But also, he wants to get involved in a personnel decision. And let me tell you something: that was an issue in Pittsburgh. That's why Ray Shiro's not there anymore because people were getting, and ownership was getting involved, and they were butting heads. And Ray Shiro's a very private guy, so. If I had to guess, I would still say New Jersey if he's offered that one before Buffalo because of the familiarity and the fact that he can trust Shiro that he won't get rid of him after a year or two because his offense is so old and they need to rebuild.
Richie, I got to say, trying to figure out who's going to be the next head coach of these teams is – I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Pete DeBoer's let go in New Jersey, okay? I know quickly we'll go to break here, but Pete DeBoer's let go in New Jersey. I like Pete DeBoer, and I kind of wasn't really sure what was going on there. Lou Lamoriello goes behind the bench. And he brings back Adam Oates and Scott Stevens. If you remember, Scott Stevens was an assistant, and then he took a year off and then came back. He brings Scott Stevens and Adam Oates back. And so I was kind of thinking, well, maybe one of those two guys is going to be promoted. Now you hear Adam Oates is going to be the next coach of the Sharks, possibly. And Scott Stevens is going to now stay on as an assistant under the next head coach. To me, it's just trying to figure out who's going where right now is – Like, who's going to be the head coach of Buffalo? It could be Luke Richardson. It could be Dan Bylsma. Mm-hmm. It could be Pete DeBoer. Who's it going to be?
Well, there's one other team that we haven't talked about. That's the San Jose Sharks. And we know that Doug Wilson is taking his time, and he's interviewing a lot of candidates. We hear Randy Carlyle's been interviewed before. Dave Lowry is the dark horse guy. Because he's where? He's with Victoria?
Yes, Victoria Royals of the WHL. Yeah. He used to be an assistant with Calgary. He used to play for Calgary. Dad of Adam Lowry.
Jets Adam Lowry. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's sort of a dark horse candidate. He's, you know, Doug Wilson interviewing a lot of guys to you know, pick their brain and everything. That's another one who could, you know, whoever gets hired there, I think it's going to be a name that we know. But as for if it's going to be Carlisle or if it's going to be DeBoer or if it's going to be, you know, they haven't really linked Bylsma very much there, but Bylsma or whatever, I think it's going to be some, just a matter of who it is still very much up in there.
I don't remember a coaching free agent market like this ever, where there are this many big name coaches that are available. It's incredible.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Adam Oates is talking to Doug Wilson as well. So, I mean, Adam Oates, who's in
Adam
New Jersey.
Oates would be the classic Doug Wilson choice.
Why do you say that?
I have respect for Adam Oates. He's a very knowledgeable guy. But is he the motivating? He really didn't have the ability to motivate Ovechkin and get him the right way.
Sure.
And is that going to be the guy you want to San Jose? I think you need to have somebody in San Jose who's either a Dave Lowry type, kind of a new type you want to give a shot.
Carlisle's a better fit there, I think.
If you're going to go down with Thornton, you might as well have a guy who's going to either push him and go down with him, or succeed with him, or go down with him. And then you can just start over. Because you've waited so darn long anyways, because you're scared of making any changes, and you don't have the wherewithal to admit that you've made mistakes along the way.
It'll be interesting, and we'll bring it all to you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. We come back. One final segment on this Saturday morning. You're listening to an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The boss,
exactly. You say he's not touring this summer there, Richard?
He's not, no.
That must be disappointing for you.
It is disappointing.
Yeah.
How's my boy Stevie Van Zandt doing, Richie?
He's always got things on the go.
Silvio
Dante from The Sopranos is, you know, his alter ego when he's not playing in the E Street Band.
He's,
of course,
he's the best. Richie knows I love him.
Yes,
Rich converted me.
Did you dress up as him for Halloween?
I did.
Halloween?
I didn't even look like him. Richie went as Springsteen, but Richie's a big Springsteen fan. I really wasn't a big Springsteen fan. I'm obviously nowhere near. No, I don't think anybody's as big of a fan as Richie. But he converted me. We went to see him in Minneapolis. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. It certainly was. Let's wrap up the show with rapid fire, like we do each and every week.
Rapid fire.
Earlier this week, the Ottawa Senators signed Andrew Hammond to a 3-year contract extension for an average of $1.35 million per season. In 24 regular season games, the Hamburglar went 21-2 with a .941 save percentage and a 1.79 goals against average. Hammond also played in 2 postseason games before being replaced with Craig Anderson. Which goalie is more likely to be traded now that Hammond has signed in Ottawa, Craig Anderson or Robin Lehner?
And it's Richie. The question is also, now that they've signed Hammond and Matt O'Connor.
They have 4 goaltenders
from Boston University. So yeah. Somebody's got to get traded. To me, you'd think that they'd stick with Craig Anderson because he's a more veteran goalie, and I believe he's under contract for 2 more years. He signed a 3-year deal last summer.
I think so, but I can check,
to
for
check
you
that.
Right now.
I should be checking this, but I like to be focused on the radio. That's why I don't overwhelm myself with.
Yes, Craig Anderson has 3 more years, including this year. So,
yeah, so
he's at $4.2 million this year and then the next 2 seasons.
I think you trade Robin Lehner and you go with Craig Anderson and Andrew Hammond next year. That's what I would do.
Well, you know, I think Anderson gets dealt. I think they went young already, you know, this year, and I think they stick with going young. They go Lehner and Hammond, and Leonard's very talented, a little bit temperamental, and they challenge him with a youngster. Anderson goes, you know, Buffalo, Edmonton, somewhere else. And
probably get more for Craig Anderson, because it must be appealing, Richie, with the term left on his contract.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. What do you get more for? Do you get more? I mean, the problem is that
more established.
Yeah, exactly. If you're Buffalo or Edmonton, I mean, the talent in Lehner is there. But Anderson, at least you know you're getting a veteran guy and you know he's under contract, and you know that, especially on a young team. Remember, Edmonton, Buffalo aren't veteran teams with a hole in net. They're young teams with a hole in net, so you probably want a veteran guy.
Yeah,
so
I think Craig Anderson is perfect for Edmonton.
I think so.
More so than Buffalo?
Either or.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy who's played on poor teams before. I mean, I think his best year in Colorado, right, where they weren't supposed to do anything. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Colorado and he had that tremendous season. Mm-hmm. And I think he took him to the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken.
It's good with Washington, too.
Was he in Washington? You mean Florida? Did he play in Washington? I think I was in Florida.
Yeah, I don't remember him.
I might be getting my states wrong.
Yeah, they are different states and cities altogether. But he never played on Washington. He was in Florida for 3 years.
He should play on Washington.
Maybe they'll trade him to Washington just to prove you right. That would be good for you, wouldn't it? On Wednesday, the Columbus Blue Jackets named Nick Foligno as their sixth team captain in history. Foligno, 27, had a career-high 73 points last season, which earned him a six-year, $33 million contract extension. The team, the Blue Jackets, have been without a captain since Rick Nash was traded low so many years ago. Nick Foligno, the right choice to be the next captain of the Columbus Blue Jackets?
I thought it was going to be Foligno or Brandon Dubinsky,
yeah,
Rich.
Yeah.
I love that Columbus team. And Scotty Hartnell's there, and their young team, they had so many injuries this year. That's the reason why they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, it was too much. But yeah, Nick Foligno had a great year this past year, and he was the captain of the All-Star team. It was in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool. You know, his dad wore number 71. You remember him for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mike Foligno, and he's with the Sudbury Wolves now. I think it makes sense, Rich. You know, Nick Foligno on the Ottawa Senators, he was a first-rounder. And he kind of developed very slowly, and he didn't really find his game until the last two or three years. And now he's become a top player for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I think it's a great decision to make him captain.
I agree with you completely. Dubinsky or Foligno, those are the two kind of emotional leaders, and Dubinsky didn't come off an offensive year this past year, and Foligno took that next step. And we had Jarmo Kekäläinen, the Columbus GM, on the show this year, and he said, you know, obviously they would have liked to have signed Foligno to a little bit more of a discount prior to this year, but he earned, you know, he was pending UFA, and he earned the contract that he got. I have no issue with them. You know, he's going to compete hard. I don't think he necessarily replicates the season next year, but you always know that he'll give you a good, honest effort, and he still is more offensively talented than a guy like Dubinsky, although Dubinsky's got his talents as well, but Foligno's more offensively talented, and both guys are really good examples, and they will lead by example, and unlike a guy like Ferentz, they can still contribute offensively or more so than a guy like Ferentz can. So you need to have a little bit of an impact on the game, or more than a little bit of an impact on the game, to be a captain, in my opinion, and I think he will have that.
As we all know, Game 2 of the Western Conference Final between the Blackhawks and the Ducks took three regulation periods and almost three full overtimes to decide. Finally,
three full bagels for you, Drew. Yes. Sit up.
Finally ending with 3 minutes and 8 seconds to go in the third overtime. It's the longest game in Blackhawks history, second longest game in Anaheim Ducks history. What is your all-time favorite playoff game that went three overtime periods or longer?
Well, this is an easy one. This is a Keith Primeau goal against Pittsburgh in the fifth overtime, was it? Is it the fifth or the fourth overtime?
I think it was the fifth.
It's when he pulled. Primeau went down the right side, pulled. Was it inside out on Kasparaitis, top glove on Tugnutt, I think it was. I think.
It could have been. There's no way that I can remember that.
I think it was.
That was, what, 15 years ago?
I don't remember.
To me, I mean, there was a great triple overtime game earlier between Chicago and Nashville. You remember Brent Seabrook?
Yeah, I mean, you can't refer to something this year.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not saying that was the one. For me, it's got to be Keith Primeau. I mean, that goal was incredible. I can't. What do you mean?
You can't change it up a bit.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
But not, you can't say Pat LaFontaine from the blue line.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy. I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richie, cheers, dear.
Well, Drew, I'm actually going to cheer Mike Babcock for making coaches more money. I'll give him that. I think the coaches, I said it earlier on in the a couple of weeks ago, that the way the league is now, coaches have such more of an impact than they did before, mm-hmm, because the talent levels are so similar, and I think coaches were underpaid, and I'm happy that they're going to get a little more cash.
I'll cheer the Flyers and Dave Haxtell. I like that hiring. Yeah. It was a little unexpected, but I think, you know, Dave Haxtell did a great job with the UND hockey program, and it's nice to see a really nice guy get his first NHL head coaching job.
I'm going to do a personal cheer. My old high school, the Gray Academy, invited me to present awards at their sports banquet earlier in this week.
Awesome.
It was a great experience. Nice to see so many young athletes.
Never told us you were doing that.
Richie knew I was doing that.
Never told me.
I never told you. I try not to talk to you outside the show. But it was great to see so many great athletes, grade 7
like
through
you.
12. Yeah, not so much like me. Not so much.
They still
like
talk
me.
About Drew's basketball days.
It was a volleyball days. But anyways, great to be there. And thank you to the Gray Academy for inviting me back to my old high school to present awards to all the great athletes.
Attaboy, Drew.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Frank Saravelli of the Philadelphia Daily News. Big thanks to Michael Trakos of the National Post. And big thanks to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. In case you missed any of that, it's available for download on iTunes. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board today. For my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays Baseball on TSN 1290.